This is Rising Up with Sonali, and I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. We're online at risingupwithsonali.com. You can now watch our TV show on Free Speech TV every weekday at 3 p.m. Pacific, 6 p.m. Eastern. FSTV is on Dish Network, DirecTV, and Roku. Presidential candidates Donald Trump and Hillary Clinton faced off on Monday night at Hofstra University in New York for the first of a handful of debates ahead of the election. The highly anticipated event was the first time the two had debated one another, and it was not pretty. Predictably, Trump made many claims that were not backed up in fact, boasted about his business prowess, and constantly went over time and interrupted Clinton. While Clinton missed many opportunities to counter Trump's claims, she did make a few points, such as denouncing trickle-down economics as well as stop-and-frisk policies. Overall, Clinton's pro-Wall Street, pro-police, pro-war positions were the ones that sounded sane in comparison to Trump's. But that's because two third-party candidates were left out of the debate. We turn now to Green Party vice presidential candidate Ajamu Baraka, who was with his running mate Dr. Jill Stein at Hofstra University, demanding that Stein be led into the debates. Ajamu Baraka is a fellow at the Institute for Policy Studies, editor and columnist for Black Agenda Report, and a longtime public intellectual and political activist. Welcome to the program, Ajamu.
Thank you. It's an honor to be here with you again.
So first, let's talk about what actually happened at Hofstra before the debate began. Earlier in that day, there were protests by supporters of yourself and Dr. Jill Stein saying that she should be let into the debates. I understand several people were arrested. What exactly happened, and how was it that Jill Stein eventually was escorted off campus, even though she actually had the papers to be there?
Yes, it was very, I guess strange, but not really that strange. It was fairly predictable. Jill was on campus with interviews, having interviews. She had the proper credentials. But after she conducted her first interview, she was then confronted by the authorities and told that she had to, in fact, stop the interview and to leave. Well, she resisted because she had a very important one, and she did that one. But after that interview, they basically told her she had to leave. And one can argue that maybe she was even detained because they would not allow her to go to the part of the university where we had a car waiting for her. Instead, they wanted to take her another route, which meant they put her in the back of a van and drove her off the campus. So she was, we quote unquote, escorted. But actually was partially detained and then evicted from the campus. So all of the individuals who were on that campus that day, it's pretty interesting that they would target Dr. Stein in that way.
So what were those who were protesting outside demanding, and how raucous and spirited was the protest?
Well, later on that afternoon, of course, our supporters began to show up. And they engaged in what was, I think, a righteous demand that Jill Stein be allowed to participate. Clearly pointed out that this commission on presidential debates is a farce, a entity that's controlled by the two parties with the intent to maintain that monopoly of the two parties. So they demanded that she be allowed to participate because the argument is that how do you have a democratic choice when you have this monopoly by these two elite parties? Here we have a Green Party that's going to be on the ballot in 46, 47 states, clearly has the apparatus to run a national campaign, has support, but is caught in this catch-22 that says you have to have 15% of the support from the electorate based on five polls, but yet you're going to be excluded from the mass of the people by the corporate press. Therefore, you can't get that 15% in order to debate. So, you know, that process is illegal, should be illegal. It's definitely immoral. And so the protesters were saying, basically, we want access.
So, Jamu, I understand that Jill, later that evening, when the debate was being aired, she actually did a live stream and responded to many of the issues. We're going to actually play now a series of highlights from Monday night's debate that we edited together, highlights that we think sort of capture not necessarily the most sensational moments of the debate, but the ones that had the most policy. Here are some highlights from the first presidential debate Monday night.
So I know how to really work to get new jobs and to get exports that help to create more new jobs.
Burke, well, you haven't done it in 30 years or 26 years,
well,
any number you want to
do. I've been a senator,
you
Donald,
haven't done it.
And
you haven't
I
done
have
it.
Been a
and
secretary of state, and I have
your
done
Your husband signed
a lot.
NAFTA, which was one of the worst things that ever happened
well,
to the manufacturing industry.
That is your
you
opinion.
Go to, you want to approve Trans-Pacific Partnership. You were totally in favor of it. Then you heard what I was saying, how bad it is, and you said, I can't win that debate. But you know that if you did win, you would approve that, and that will be almost as bad as NAFTA. Nothing will ever top NAFTA.
Well, Donald, I know you live in your own reality, but that is not the facts. The facts are, I did say I hoped it would be a good deal, but when it was negotiated, which I was not responsible for, I concluded it wasn't. I wrote about that.
So is it President Obama's fault? Is it President Obama's fault?
Even announced.
The things that businesses and people like the most is the fact that I'm cutting regulation. You have regulations on top of regulations, and new companies cannot form, and old companies are going out of business, and you want to increase the regulations and make them even worse.
We have to work to make sure that our police are using the best training, the best techniques, that they're well prepared to use force only when necessary. Everyone should be respected by the law, and everyone should respect the law. Right now, that's not the case in a lot of our neighborhoods. So I have, ever since the first day of my campaign, called for criminal justice reform.
When I look at what's going on throughout various parts of our country, whether it's, I mean, I can just keep naming them all day long. We need law and order in our country. And I just got today the, as you know, the endorsement of the Fraternal Order of Police. We just came in. We have endorsements from, I think, almost every police group, a large percentage of them in the United States. We have to bring back law and order. Now, whether or not in a place like Chicago you do stop and frisk, which worked very well, Mayor Giuliani is here, it worked very well in New York, it brought the crime rate way down. But
stop and frisk was found to be unconstitutional, and in part because it was ineffective. It did not do what it needed to do. Now, I believe in community policing, and in fact, violent crime is one half of what it was in 1991.
I do want to bring up the fact that you were the one that brought up the word super predator about young black youth.
But we also have to intensify our air strikes against ISIS and eventually support our Arab and Kurdish partners to be able to actually take out ISIS in Raqqa and their claim of being a caliphate. We're making progress. Our military is assisting in Iraq, and we're hoping that within the year, we'll be able to push ISIS out of Iraq and then, you know, really squeeze them in Syria.
Secretary Clinton is talking about taking out ISIS. We will take out ISIS. Well, President Obama and Secretary Clinton created a vacuum the way they got out of Iraq. Or, as I've been saying for a long time, and I think you'll agree because I said it to you once, had we taken the oil, and we should have taken the oil, ISIS would not have been able to form either because the oil was their primary source of income.
Donald supported the invasion of Iraq.
Wrong.
That is absolutely
wrong.
Proved over and over again.
Wrong.
He actually advocated for the actions we took in Libya.
I was against the war in Iraq, just so you put it out.
The record shows otherwise.
The record
but why
does
is,
not show
why
that.
Why is your
the
judgment
The record
any...
shows that I'm right.
And those are highlights from the first presidential debate that took place Monday night at Hofstra University. Joining me now is Ajamu Baraka, the Green Party vice presidential candidate, joining us to respond to some of the issues that were said. So in the there was a three-part debate, the first part focusing on income inequality, which is arguably one of the most important issues during this campaign. Ajamu, I was surprised that Hillary Clinton denounced trickle-down economics. But then, of course, she was on the defensive from Donald Trump about her support for NAFTA and for the Trans-Pacific Partnership. What do you make of the conversation around income inequality between these two candidates?
Well, let me, before I answer that specific question, let me just also to remind your listeners that the protests continued outside of the hall. And more than 20 of our activists ended up being arrested, trying to demand a democracy. I wanted to make sure that people understood that, because that was a very courageous act. In terms of the substance of the debate, I mean, in both candidates basically had a form of trickle down economics. Trump pretending to be a populist, concerned about the working class. By opposing these free trade agreements that have, in fact, had a negative impact on the working class. Hillary Clinton, who now claims to be opposed to TPP, the Trans-Pacific Partnership, pretending that she's not the neoliberal capitalist that we know she is. Both of them engaged in a series of policy proposals. Then they still did not get to the crux of the problem in this country. And that is, we have an economic system that is presently organized in such a way where the vast majority of the people in this country are not going to be able to address their material needs. That the income inequality that we see in this country is going to continue to widen. The poverty rate is going to become even more deep. So both of these candidates are engaged in an election year posturing, but neither one of them have the ideological orientation and the political commitment to really get to the root of the causes, mm-hmm. which basically means and suggests that we have to have real radical economic restructuring in order to bring about an economy in which the fundamental human rights of all people are going to be realized.
Ajamu, it was so interesting to see Trump push Clinton, saying that NAFTA was one of the worst things that the U.S. ever did and that her support for TPP was terrible. And then he went around talking about how it was regulations that hampered business and economic growth, and that everywhere he went, the businesses and the people who were in the business world complained about were how regulations were hampering economic growth. Well, aren't free trade policies designed to remove regulations, right? I mean, I was surprised Clinton didn't jump back and say, well, if you want to be against regulations for corporations, then you should be for NAFTA and the TPP.
Exactly. And that's why many of us don't believe that Trump's opposition to TPP is authentic, because ideologically, he is also a free trader, as he came back on a number of occasions with Hillary Clinton, saying basically, my decisions were objective business decisions in terms of not paying taxes or offshoring his jobs or whatever. He is driven by the logic of capitalism. And if it makes sense for them to deregulate further the international economy, then that's going to be the route he will go. So if he was elected president, he will find a way to soften his opposition to the TPP. He would maybe renegotiate some aspects of it, but he will probably fall in line like the rest of them. So this is part of that phony conversation that we're having that is pretending to be a serious discourse about these very serious issues here in this country.
Then they talked about race and policing. Again, one of the most important issues in the country today. It was really interesting to hear both of them talking about having to work with police as a solution. Hillary Clinton talked about the importance of having to work with police, and then Trump went further saying that he has gotten the endorsement of the Fraternal Order of Police, one of the most horrific police unions in the country, the single largest force that has been against the freedom of political prisoner Mumia Abu-Jamal, but to Trump, that was a very important thing. And then they went on to talk about stop and frisk policies, which to her credit, Clinton denounced as being racist and unconstitutional, and Trump defended to the end and credited stop and frisk for making New York City safer. How substantive was this discussion? It was sad that neither candidate actually uttered those three important words, Black Lives Matter.
Well, it was an interesting conversation. It's interesting that this issue of race and state violence has now become part of the political debate. And it's sad because now we are, many African Americans, it's a political football in terms of addressing the consistent and persistent slaughter, assaults on the Black community, poor people, working class people here in this country. And what's being proposed to address this reality is basically cosmetic, that neither one of those candidates have the understanding or the honesty to share with the American people that the kind of intensified policing that we see in the Black communities is a consequence of the objective devaluation of those communities, that the main objective of the police is to control and to contain, and that's in fact what they're doing. Now they're facing a public relations problem in that technology is capturing how they are in fact engaging in their control efforts. So, you know, better community relations with the police, you know, is not going to deal with the structural reality of the mission of policing here in this country. We don't have community control, real community control, democratic control of the police. If the mission's not transformed of the police, then it's going to be a continuation and an intensification of the kind of repression that we see in Black and brown communities.
To her credit, Clinton did say she believed in community policing, but didn't actually stop to expand on what that would mean. Let's finally turn to the issue of national security, which came up. First, there was a whole section on cybersecurity, but on the issue of war, and Ajamu, I know that your foreign policy is a very important issue for you. The two candidates both seem to have the very same policy on the Islamic State and on ISIS, which is that basically we need to bomb them out of existence. Clinton showed her sort of war hawkishness by using terms like we need to take out the ISIS leadership. Trump had this bizarre claim that if we had just taken all the oil out of Iraq when we left, I don't know how he means we would have done that, that somehow ISIS would not have materialized. But is there any serious difference between the two candidates on the issue of foreign policy?
No, not really. For the two candidates you have, for Clinton, Russians are the enemy. For Trump, is the Chinese. Both are advocating aggressive stances toward those two nations. Clinton, of course, is also is very aggressive when it comes to Iran, even though she supports the agreement. But both of these candidates are committed to maintain the U.S. hegemony globally. The means in which they might advance that are slightly different, but both are committed to propping up the military. Both are committed to the national security strategy that's been the hallmark of U.S. foreign policy since the late 1990s. Both are committed to using the military to advance the interests of the transnational elite. So there's not much difference. The only difference, however, is that Trump, being a business person who understands that for the Russians, they just want to do business, and therefore he may be more prepared to cut some kind of deal to reduce tensions between the U.S. And Russia. But that's offset by his commitment to pivot and target the Chinese.
It seems as though the main difference between them is one might be a level-headed hawk and the other might be a much more easily perturbed hawk, you know, somebody who responds to, as Clinton said, an annoying or insulting tweet. But in the end, neither of them seemed to want to pull back on the U.S.'s military reach. There were, of course, many other aspects to the debate, such as Trump's horribly sexist remarks about Clinton not having a presidential look. Overall, however, it was a narrow set of debates. There will be more debates to come. Ajamu, I'm sure we'll have you back on between now and November. Until then, I want to thank you so much for joining us today. And give out a website for the presidential campaign that you and Jill Stein are running.
Yes, Jill 2016. Also, you can go to my website, ajamubaraka.com, to be linked into the campaign and to the specific things that I'm talking about.
And we'll post those two links from our website later today. Ajamu, best of luck to you. Thanks so much.
Thank you for having me.
Ajamu Baraka is a fellow at the Institute for Policy Studies, editor and columnist for Black Agenda Report, longtime public intellectual and political activist, and the Green Party's 2016 vice presidential candidate. This is Rising Up with Sonali. I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. We're online at risingupwithsonali.com and on Facebook at facebook.com/RU with Sonali.